Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Evangelical Immigration Table Call on Refugees and Religious Freedom. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by if you should need any assistance. It's now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Ms. Jenny Yang, Senior Vice President of Advocacy and Policy with World Relief. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, I just want to welcome everyone to this really important call that comes at a really important time in our country. We know that over the past several weeks, there has been intense discussions within the White House and within the administration on the U.S. response to the global refugee crisis. For decades, the U.S. government has welcomed some of the most vulnerable refugees from around the world in partnership with U.S. refugee agencies, including World Relief. And since 1980, the U.S. has resettled more than 3 million refugees. However, over the past few years, the number of refugees admitted to the U.S. has dropped dramatically. This year, the U.S. is on track to receive fewer than 22,000 refugees by the end of 2018, which is a decline of more than 75% from the previous year. This decline has impacted Muslim refugees the most dramatically. But while the Muslim ban and travel ban have been in the news, we also know that this ban has also impacted persecuted Christians in particular. Many in the church have been advocating for religious freedom for those who are fleeing persecution, religious persecution. And many of these individuals have been able to find freedom and safety in the United States of America. And so the recent changes within refugee policy and with the travel ban specifically have impacted many of these really vulnerable communities all around the world. The leaders of the Evangelical Immigration Table expressed their concerns about the decline in the refugee program specifically in a letter sent this month to Secretary of State Pompeo, to Secretary of Homeland Security Nielsen, and the Ambassador for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback. And in the letter, we basically outline our concerns about this decline and really ask for the administration to implement a high refugee ceiling and the necessary processes that are needed to ensure that refugees come to the United States in a continuous and robust flow. As I mentioned earlier, right now the administration is in conversations around the refugee ceiling for fiscal year 2019, which will be starting on October 1st in just a few weeks. Simply put, we believe that the ceiling, if it's again set lower than the 45,000 of this year, that it would again be shutting the door on those who are fleeing persecution, in particular those who are persecuted Christians trying to find safety in another place. On today's call, we're going to be hearing from national evangelical leaders as well as local pastors about what this ceiling means for them in their communities. And I just want to emphasize that even though this is a humanitarian response, our response to the number of refugees that are admitted will also have national security and foreign policy implications as well. So this decision about the number of refugees the U.S. is going to be admitting will have dire consequences, I believe, on the global role of the United States in responding to humanitarian crises and refugees specifically. And so I'm happy to have on the call our first speaker, Galen Carey, who is a Vice President of Government Relations for the National Association of Evangelicals. Galen?
Thank you, Jenny, and good morning, everyone. The National Association of Evangelicals is this year celebrating our 75th anniversary. And one of the very first things that we did after being founded was to set up the War Relief Commission, which is now known as World Relief, in order to respond to the crises of refugees in Europe during and after World War II. The protection and care and resettlement of the world's most vulnerable refugees brings together several key concerns of evangelical Christians. These are outlined in the NAE's foundational document on public policy, which is called For the Health of the Nation. And I want to just briefly mention several of these: religious freedom, human rights, sanctity of life, care for the poor and vulnerable, peace, and protecting children and families. First of all, religious freedom. Many refugees are believers who have been persecuted for their faith because they're Christians or because they belong to another faith that is disfavored. Where conditions do not permit them to return to their homes, we have the opportunity to provide a small percentage of the most vulnerable refugees with the chance to rebuild their lives in a country where they can worship and live in freedom and peace. We commend President Trump, Secretary Pompeo, and Ambassador Brownback for convening in August an important gathering of leaders from more than 80 countries to focus on improving religious freedom around the world. The NAE participated and supported this event. And one way the administration can build on the success of this event is to strengthen the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program and ensure that it's responsive to the needs of persecuted religious minorities. Secondly, human rights. The abuse of human rights is an affront to God, who created us with inalienable human dignity as bearers of God's image. In the many years of working with refugees, I've met and prayed with people who have been raped and tortured, mutilated, imprisoned, fired from their jobs, driven from their homes. Those who have suffered so much need a second chance at a normal, peaceful life in a community where they can flourish, participate freely, and raise their children. Refugee resettlement provides this opportunity, and it blesses both the refugees and the communities who receive them. Briefly, sanctity of human life, as we support protection for all people from the unborn to the elderly, and resettling refugees is another important way that we protect the sanctity of human life. Care for the poor and vulnerable. Most refugees arrive with little more than the clothes on their back and hope in their hearts. And they face daunting challenges of learning new language and culture, making friends, finding work, healing from trauma. And these are tasks which Christians are ideally equipped to assist with. My own family has had the privilege of welcoming many refugees into our home, and it has invariably been our great privilege. Well, briefly, peace. Resettling refugees is often part of bringing an end to intractable conflicts and providing stability in regions of the world where that is in short supply. Protecting children and families, especially children, have their whole lives in front of them, and living in refugee camps for an average of 17 years or more is destructive to their human potential. So we applaud the efforts to ensure that all people are able to practice their faith and live in peace and freedom. It's not only Christians that we're concerned about. Certainly the largest number, for example, of refugees, the top countries in the last decade has been Burma or Myanmar, where more than 70% of the refugees coming here have been Christians. But their numbers are way down in the past year, which is deeply concerning. But not only Christians, there's Yazidis, Jews, Muslims, and many others who benefit from this program. So because of these concerns, as Jenny mentioned, we are appealing to President Trump and the administration to increase the refugee ceiling or restore it to its historical level so that we can help more refugees and contribute to a more peaceful and safer world for everyone. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Galen. Next, I'd like to introduce Nathan Bolt, who's the Director of Government Affairs for Bethany Christian Services. Nathan?
Thanks so much, Jenny. As Jenny mentioned, we are in the midst of the worst refugee crisis in world history. Today, nearly 70 million people are forcibly displaced from their homes, a number greater than the combined populations of California and Texas. Children, who comprise about 30% of the world's population, actually account for half of the world's refugee population. At Bethany Christian Services, we know that refugee resettlement saves lives, and that is why we are deeply concerned about the decline in refugee admissions. Bethany has resettled 54% of the refugees we expected this year, and nationwide resettlement has dropped approximately 75% from last year's numbers. While it can be easy to distance oneself from the crisis at hand by looking only at numbers or percentages, it's important to remember that behind every one of these numbers is a name. Every name has a story, and every story matters to God. at Bethany, at World Relief, and at the many other faith-based resettlement agencies, that means refugees matter to us. Now, here's just one example about how refugees have been woven into the fabric of our communities. Bethany has historically resettled Congolese Christians in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area, helping them restart their lives after spending an average of 20 years in refugee camps in Rwanda, Tanzania, and other places throughout Africa. Most Congolese Christian refugees are single mothers and children who have fled persecution and unimaginable terror. Today, Grand Rapids is home to 11 Congolese churches that 20 years ago didn't even exist. Bethany has also resettled nearly 30 Rohingya children in the last 3 years alone, kids who've been on the move their entire lives because of their religion and their ethnicity. Sadly, the U.S. is on track to settle about half the number of Rohingya that we resettled last year. Bethany has served thousands of refugee children from places like Sudan, Burma, and Cuba. While these children have renewed hope for their future because of resettlement, more than 130,000 children became unaccompanied or were separated from their families last year alone, and more than 13 million children remain refugees. Working with volunteers and local church partners, we want to continue to be able to help American communities welcome refugees, like these Congolese Christians and Rohingya children, the way that Jesus has called us to. We believe that it's critically important for the administration to set the refugee ceiling for fiscal year 2019 at 75,000 refugees or higher, and also to ensure that refugee processing is done as efficiently as possible to meet that goal so that those who've been persecuted for their faith, ethnicity, or political beliefs are able to find safety and security in the United States.
Great. Thank you so much, Nathan. And next, I'd like to introduce Patrick Vaughn, who's the assistant pastor of Christ Church East Bay in Oakland, California. Patrick?
As a local pastor, I don't come at this issue primarily as a political question, but as a biblical question. And when I read the Bible, I see a God who made people in his image. That means that all people, no matter their country of origin, their religious background, has inherent dignity. Each life is worth protecting and is a neighbor whom Jesus commands us to love. And so my congregation, there are people in my congregation trying to love refugees, to extend welcome to refugees the best we can. We do that. We've done that through partnering with the International Rescue Committee, which is the resettlement agency that is our local agency here in Oakland, and donating food and gift cards for when families arrive. We've had a team of women back in 2017 from our church who welcomed a family from Afghanistan, formed a team that furnished their apartment, welcomed them here, helped them navigate being in America and figuring out how things work here, and really providing friendship to them, which I think is one of the greatest gifts that we can offer refugees in America, but also the church in particular. In 1 John, it says, perfect love drives out fear. And so we have there's nothing to be afraid about when it comes to welcoming refugees. We can be their friends and welcome them here. And this has really hit home to me recently when a member of my congregation was sharing with me that his father came here in the 1970s with his family as refugees from Vietnam. And it was a church in Michigan that welcomed them, that provided housing for them, that helped smooth over relationships with neighbors who didn't want them there, that really offered welcome and love to them. And to this day, the families of that church are live on in legend in my congregant's family. They are deeply grateful for the welcome, for the friendship that they received from this church that did not know them, that welcomed them into America, into a new home. And I think that the church has abundant resources of love and radical hospitality, because it's radical love, it's radical hospitality that God extends to us in Jesus. Romans says that Jesus loves us even when we were God's enemies. And that is radical love. That's radical neighboring that Jesus demonstrates to us. And my question for the evangelical church as an evangelical pastor is, when you experience welcome like that from the God of the universe, how can you not welcome refugees? And I just believe that the church has abundant resources, that America has abundant resources to welcome refugees, to enjoy security and liberty and friendship, the friendship that Christians in America and Americans have to offer those who are most vulnerable in the world.
I'm sorry, I believe I'm next, but I can't hear anything. Make sure we're still good to go.
Yes, sir, you are connected. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. My name is Eric Costanzo. I'm senior pastor at South Tulsa Baptist Church. And we've spent the last 2 years developing what we call an international and refugee ministry that we opened up after realizing that just outside of our church, even though we are in the more affluent side of town, we had thousands of refugee and international immigrant families right outside our doors. And it's really been incredible to see how the international community and our church family have joined hands and developed strong relationships and friendships, and it's created opportunities for us as a church to serve all the way from the local school level to inside our campus facilities to the homes of refugees. And in just about 2 years' time, we've seen this ministry grow to have 40 countries represented and several paid English as second language teachers who are kind of the centerpiece of what we do, especially for adults. But we also have the opportunity to engage with lots of refugee children and hear their stories and what it was that drove them to flee their homes and ultimately end up displaced either within their own country or in a neighboring country to go through a multi-year process of living in a camp or a shabby provided apartment, to prayerfully apply, go through an intense process of vetting and background check and question and answer situation, and many times answering questions that I'm not sure I would be able to answer personally about my own personal details, hoping that they would be able to come to the United States, which for most of them there's a very small chance that will happen. But for those who have ended up here, even particularly in Tulsa, they are extremely gracious and thankful and happy to accept not only friendship with us, but services that help them integrate into the community more. We've seen several of our refugees get involved in a sewing program where we're teaching them seamstress skills that have provided jobs for them and for their family. We've seen several of our English students as adults enroll in citizenship classes and become American citizens. Our refugees that are a part of our church contribute back in so many different ways, and particularly, as was mentioned before, we have a strong population of Burmese refugees in Tulsa. And our Burmese refugees are, by and large, evangelical Christians themselves. And so we found just by engaging them in English and teaching them some simple English, we have joint Bible studies, discipleship programs, and our Burmese families in particular contribute a lot to the spiritual life of our church and to the physical, emotional, and spiritual health of our community here in Tulsa. And so, of course, engaging with these people, you begin to learn more about their stories and learn about the importance of family reunification. And many of our refugees here in Tulsa are still waiting for their immediate family members to go through a process they already began that has now been almost ground to a halt. And more stipulations or unexpected delays have been added. And for the most part, for the last year and a half plus, a lot of these families have not had any traction gained. We also have had the benefit here in Tulsa of having one of our state senators, James Lankford, who is a United States senator representing our state. He's one of the only Republican senators who has been extremely vocal on behalf of refugees, and he happens to represent our state and also be from our evangelical denomination. And so we found significant support and help there and access to a lot of information that many people might not be able to have that doesn't come directly from the media or anything like that, but comes from the front lines and the sources that are connected to Washington, along with our relationships with groups like World Relief, who are working, again, right on the front lines with our refugee neighbors. And so our prayer as we move into advocacy is that our elected officials, and in particular the current administration, would hear our voices and the stories of the people we represent and help revitalize the refugee program, not lower the numbers, not continue to dismantle the infrastructure, but to help our country continue to be welcoming and celebrate our diversity and be the first place that people can turn to for compassion, especially considering just how wealthy we are and how extravagant so many of us live. I think as Christians, it is our responsibility to demand that we are generous in every possible way to these people who are in the most desperate need at the worst point in world history in terms of a refugee crisis. So we're thankful to serve those who are already here, but we also want to advocate and call for compassion and action among Christians for those who have yet to be resettled.
Great. Thank you so much, Ert. And sorry about earlier. That was Erica Samuel. He's the senior pastor of South Tulsa Baptist Church in Tulsa. We also were supposed to have Dr. David Curry, who's the CEO of Open Doors USA, but he unfortunately is not able to join the call at this moment. So with that, operator, could you please provide instructions for how folks on the phone can queue up a question?
Absolutely. If you'd like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star and one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to be removed from the queue, simply press the pound key. Again, to ask a question, please press star and one now. We'll pause momentarily to allow questions to queue.
And while questions are queuing up, I'll just mention that the full language of the table, the letter from August that the Evangelical Immigration Table sent to Secretary Pompeo and Secretary Nielsen and Ambassador Brownback is available online. It's available at bit.ly/evangelical-refugee-letter, all lowercase. Again, it's available at bit.ly/evangelical-refugee-letter. And we'll also include that link in a release following this call, along with a link to the recording of this call as well. So with that, Tony, do we have any questions in the queue?
We do have a question from Heather Sells with CBN News. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks. Yeah, my question is, what are the countries or particular groups of refugees that you're hearing from that cannot get into the U.S. right now, the groups that are really on your heart that are finding a closed door?
Sure. Galen, would you like to answer that question?
Sure. Well, it's actually every country is affected because the numbers of people that have been admitted are so low. That there are people being stranded and left behind from every country of concern. You know, certainly some of the countries have been mentioned, like the Burmese, the Congolese, Iraqis, Syrians, and many others. All of them, because of the slowdown in interviews, because of repetitive rechecks of all kinds of vetting, and just because of a policy of reducing the numbers, there are many people being stranded from every country of concern.
Great. Thanks, Galen. And I'm wondering whether or not Patrick and Eric, if either of you can provide a perspective from the local level. Are there specific refugee populations your church has been praying for, or maybe even families you know that are waiting for other families overseas? From your local perspective, are there specific groups that you both are concerned about? And maybe, Patrick, we can start with you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, here in Oakland, with the drastic reduction of the resettlement of refugees, it's almost ground to a halt here because the IRC, the International Rescue Committee, is the only local organization in Oakland, and there's just very few. It's hard to resettle refugees in the Bay Area because it's an expensive place. And so there are a number of Afghani refugees. There are some Burmese refugees here. And so those are some populations that we are aware of and praying for here. But it's drastically affected anyone who might have family in the Bay Area as a refugee and wanting to be resettled here. It's just kind of ground to a halt here. And so our prayers are really focused on having a larger ceiling so that we see more refugees resettled in the Bay Area.
Thanks so much, Patrick. And Eric, how about from your perspective in Tulsa?
Absolutely. You know, we were seeing a small but growing population of Syrians being resettled here in Tulsa. There are absolutely none arriving through our resettlement agencies or into our programs at the schools. But our Burmese population in Oklahoma City and Tulsa, our two major metro areas, they're very large, and a lot of them have seen unexplainable delays in their family members joining them. We used to see large groups in the airport on a regular basis welcoming new Burmese families. We now have a dozen Burmese churches in the state, and you know, so many great things that just flow really well in the streams of what the evangelical world is like here in Tulsa and Oklahoma City. And we've seen that population even being able to provide all the background information needed and to have a strong Christian faith in terms of their roots, that they're not being resettled. And interestingly, we're also seeing on the back end of that several of our Burmese families who have been here for a while, one parent or both parents have been applying for citizenship, and that's been delayed without any explanation. And we'll do inquiries often through our senator's office, and all we receive back is cases pending. And it's in a very uncharacteristic way from the way we were seeing citizenship as a possibility for others in the past. So I think that the phrase we keep using, ground to a halt, is really true across the board, overseas and here, and even on the back end of refugees taking the next step in their process.
Great. Thank you so much, Eric. Tony, can we get the next question, please, in the queue?
Absolutely. And as a reminder, that is star and one to ask your question. Next, we'll move to Emily Miller with Religion News Service. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you so much. We've been hearing reports that the number of refugees that the president and the administration might be admitting for the coming fiscal year would be about 25,000. Is that a number that you also are hearing? And is this unprecedented? Have we ever seen numbers that low since the program was started?
Sure. And Nathan Bolt from Bethany Christian Services, can you answer that question?
Yeah, I would be happy to. So we're hearing several different numbers. The 25,000 number that you reference is what I'll call a trial balloon that the administration seemed to float about a month ago. And I think there are probably competing factions in Congress as well as in the administration. We've heard numbers as low as 5,000. And we've talked to members of Congress who want to see numbers as high as 100,000, like they were just 2 years ago. But 45,000, the number for this year, is already the lowest presidential determination in history. 25,000 would send it even lower. In the immediate aftermath of September 11, 2001, was the lowest number of refugees resettled in a single fiscal year, and I believe that number was slightly over 27,000. And again, we're on pace to resettle between 21 and 22,000 refugees this fiscal year, which comes to an end in just a couple of weeks. So we are already at unprecedented low levels of refugees being resettled, and we're deeply concerned that it's only going to get lower.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much, Nathan. Antonio, is there another question in the queue?
It appears we have no further questions at this time.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, everyone, again, for joining this call. The letter that was sent in August is available at bit.ly/evangelicalrefugeeletter. And we'll also be sending out shortly after this call a press release with specific quotes from the speakers, as well as a link to the recording of the call. I just want to thank all the speakers for joining and for the press on the call as well. With that, thank you very much and have a great day.